Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome to the Edge of Sports podcast. I'm Dave Zirin. We are brought to you, as always, by The Nation Magazine. Thrilled this week to have on the show, and I've wanted this to happen for a long time. We are talking to an actor of the highest note, a voice artist, somebody who people pay to take their picture, which has yet to occur to me, but it's on my bucket list. And also somebody who's not only from Chicago, extra props for this show, but also received training at the legendary Second City Theater. My goodness, walked in the shoes of John Belushi, and we've got her on this show. She also, though, and this is why we're talking about her, she's been one of the rare souls in the world of entertainment to speak out against the horrific genocide taking place in the Middle East. Her voice is a brave one. We're thrilled to have her. Sarah Alami. Sarah, how are you?
I'm great. What an intro. Thank you so much.
Now, is there anything I missed? Because you have credits upon credits. I just didn't want to read your IMDb page.
No, I was actually shocked that you knew about the whole Second City stuff. Because that's, regardless of like any TV credit that I've done or movie, Second City is like my love. It's my love. Yeah. So that's where I got my start, Chicago. And yeah, I think that's pretty good intro.
Let me ask you this before I get to super serious questions. You know, like anybody who's into comedy, the Second City Theater, you know, you say that with, you know, hushed tones. I've always wondered, is the community there generational? Like, do the people who, whatever, either made it big or didn't make it big, do they come back and talk to the young folks? Does it work that way, or is it just one generation at a time?
It wasn't my experience, and I wish that had happened. I mean, can you imagine if like the Belushis came in? I mean, you know, at least Jim.
Yeah,
that would have been very.
Jim, cool. You know, let's just, you know, I hear you.
Yeah, but still there's this huge, like, actually they would play for us like old skits of Second City. So like we would see those. That was a part of the introduction. And then you can see like the pictures on the wall and stuff like that. So that was really cool. I wish I could have met some of the greats, but a lot of them were gone kind of by the time that, you know, like they were out of Chicago. They had already built their careers and everything, but it was phenomenal. I missed that because I did leave Chicago and I went to Los Angeles for a bit. And I'm not sure. I think they have a Second City out there. I'm not sure. It's not the same. It's like Chicago is like a specific. They do have Groundlings, which is great in LA. And I did that for a bit. They had UCB and that was awesome. But there was just like, I don't know. It was like home people, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, I've seen The Bear. I get it.
Yes.
But to throw it right back. Oh, and also Southside, which they horribly canceled on Max, probably the funniest show I've seen in the last 10 years. Why am I talking about that? I did want to ask you, though, before we get into speaking about the global politics. You're from Chicago, as you mentioned. We were speaking a little before about your parents, and I found it really fascinating, like the soil from which you grew. Could you speak about your parents and how they informed your politics?
Oh, of course. So, you know, I said I just recently lost my mom, and that was unexpected. So I'm you know, it's really hard still what I'm going through right now, missing her. But I will say my mom is like Chicago Southside Irish. She's got like a FU kind of attitude. She always spoke her mind, and she was like this little hardcore Irish Southside woman. And then my dad, and she's Irish Catholic, mind you. And then my dad comes in the picture, and he's like, a refugee from Palestine. He was born in 1944 in Palestine. So this is before, Israel was even created. And so he comes, to America. He actually came after the Six-Day War because my father had gone through so much. I mean, he was like, that's why we don't refer to Palestinians as prisoners, because my dad was in a prison, but it was against his will. He didn't commit a crime. He was never tried. He was beaten. It was as simple as being like on a road he wasn't supposed to be on, and they kept him there in solitary confinement. So anyway, after all of that, he came. It was actually after the Six-Day War, so he came in the 70s here, and he started working for my grandpa. And so that's how he met my mom, because
Wait, he worked for your mother's father?
my mother's father, yeah, he
Oh,
just
wow. Office
yeah and
romance.
right but it was so funny because they were like, they couldn't be more opposite. My father, he had this heavy accent, like I said, completely different religion. But my mom grew up in Canaryville, and she grew up in a time where there was segregation, and she, for the life of her, she couldn't understand, because she couldn't understand why were black people treated so different. She didn't understand that dynamic. Why can't I be in school with them? And so she started speaking out, like, all the time. She made it her mission to keep speaking out. And so when she met my father, she saw the same thing. Like, he just wasn't accepted here. Everything on TV, his people were depicted as terrorists every time. And so she would always speak out about it. And then, obviously they had us. They did divorce after, but there was still this like mutual respect for each other. And so it was always like so important for me, after seeing them and growing up around this and seeing like the just actually the differences, the differences, but also in between those differences, there was one thing, and that was the humanity, that each of these people had something. And it's just like they all had this fight to be, treated as equals. And so, yeah, I think that was just instilled at a young age.
I gotta tell you, the most beautiful pro-Palestinian wall art pieces I've ever seen were in the city of Belfast. So you have that beautiful connection between Ireland, the Irish people. We've certainly seen it in sports and the soccer matches in Ireland. This beautiful connection of anti-colonialism that has proved to be this beautiful commonality that I love still exists, even with the pressures on the Irish much lessened over the last several decades. It's beautiful.
It's made me and I actually just wrote I just wrote a pilot about that upbringing and the different
Wait a
dynamics.
minute, you wrote a pilot?
I did.
You
I'll
just
talk
said that offhand. Like, oh, and then I wrote this
about
pilot.
it. I know. It's just 'cause we're like having meetings right now and stuff, but it looks really fulfilling. I'm very excited about it. But it is about that upbringing, but also it's funny because there's like a lot of funny things that kind of happen that I'm bringing to life. Like, real quick, I'm just gonna say this real quick. During my mom's funeral, I had the Catholic side and the Muslims come together, and so Muslims, they don't do cremation, and I'm sitting here, I gotta cry. I got a chain with my mom's neck. I have ashes, like, literally in, because my sister-in-law had it, these like little chains made where we had put the ashes in there. And that was something that was very dear to me, I didn't know. But they were still like ex they were still accepting of, me and my wishes to like whatever we chose to do with my mom. But it's just something that they didn't really know about. Like, it's not something that they were used to, And then so my aunt kept asking me questions about like when my father goes, she's like, but he will be put in the ground, right? This is not he's
Oh my God.
yeah, he's not on your neck, right?
He's not on your neck.
He's not on your neck. And I looked at my dad. I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, Dad, what do you want? He's like, you could just put me in the ground. I'm like, but anyway, it's just like these little things like that that are just different. But yeah, I forgot even what.
I don't know. What is it like? I mean, this connects to the first question, so we can actually start the prepared part of the interview. Is what is it like to try to sell a Palestinian, I guess, immigration story for television? I mean, we have seen one of the blessings of the last couple of years has been shows like Mo, for example, that have shown this slice of US life, certainly in Rami as well. But
Yes.
how does that affect your ability to try to sell something like this in what I would think of as a broad anti-Palestinian atmosphere? And yet you have these shows, and yet you have all this talent, and you're, how do those different dynamics work?
So the thing is, actually, and I don't want to say his name right now because we're in talks, but I had a friend who had done, who's been very successful with TV shows and movies, and he's a director and he's a writer, and he's also from Chicago, or he's spent a lot of time in Chicago. So actually, years ago, we were just talking, and he's like, you have an incredible backstory. Because I would tell him other things about my life and everything. Because also, we were very poor. Like, we were living on the south side of Chicago, like I said, with my mom, below poverty. Like, whatever. I'm just gonna be upfront with you. We had
Sure.
roaches and my, like, it was a lot. We didn't have food basic essentials. And then my father, actually, he was a massage therapist. And like, he was working his way up, and then he started massaging like Chicago Bulls, some of the Bears. I remember I got this little autograph from Keith Van Horn. And so I didn't know he was a big deal at the time, because I was just like a little thing. But that was really cool. And then my father ended up meeting this woman, Dinette Stoffer. So she owned Stoffer Foods. Her family created that. So it was a weird dynamic, because that type of money and lifestyle, I never saw that in my life, because I only knew this certain kind of lifestyle here. So it was weird. So it was so different, my life on my mom's side and my dad's side, because now it's not just different ethnicities and different religious backgrounds. Now it's like the poorest of the poor, and like almost like beyond, like, very, very wealthy. So when my friend, who was a writer and everything, he's known me for a very long time, he's like, it's such an interesting story. He's like, you gotta write this. And I was like, yeah, I'll write it. I'll write it one day. And I never did. I never did. I kind of got caught up. I'm not a writer, but I am a sketch artist. So I would do little sketches. I would write little sketches for people and stuff like that and send it out. And so, and he was a fan of my like sketch kind of work, like sketch artist stuff. So when it came time, actually, it was when my mom died. When my mom died, I did not know how. I've never lost anybody that close to me. I did have one of my best friends like shot and killed when I was younger, like south side of Chicago was a gang shooting. But I never lost a family member that was like that, my mom, and I didn't know how to cope. And so when she died, I was in my room. I was going through like that deep depression, that void. And I picked up my pen and I just started writing. I was just writing about my life. And then I have her journal right here. I found her journal, and some of the things we had written were verbatim. And so anyway, I started writing, and that's just kind of how it came. And I just couldn't stop. And so,
Amazing.
yeah.
That's amazing. I can also say, writing is fighting, as Muhammad Ali said, even if it's just fighting back from that kind of depression. I know my mom passed, and as I texted you this, or I messaged you this, my mom passed in December of 23, and yeah, it's been a rough ordeal. Writing has been one of the few things I've found curative in this time.
Oh yeah, it's so interesting, and I don't think anyone really explains death, because people do say, I'm sorry, of course, for your loss, and I understand that, but I've never experienced, it's more than a sadness, it's like this void, my mom. And this is the thing too, One of her biggest wishes was to see a free Palestine because she had fought so hard for this for so long. And I had said, listen, I'm not a very religious person myself, okay? But if there is something out there, I pray that my mom, like to the children of Gaza, I give you my mom. I hope my mom could be like the mom to all of them, like to all of those children who you see, like one right after the other. You just see them like dead. You see them dead in their parents' eyes. I mean, and they're sorry, you see them dead. You see the children in Palestine dead, and you see their parents holding them and screaming. And I think if I had one wish, if like I had one wish, I would say, like, I give my mom to you. I give my mom to you. Like I want her to be your mom. Like in heaven, if there was.
God, it's clear that what compels you is this beautiful and healthy mix of the political and the personal, and it seems so logical to me to stand up against genocide. And Hollywood has such a tradition, if you're talking about somewhere like, say, Sudan, to speak out against genocide. And I guess I want to, first and foremost, is it really that cynical, like the people you speak with, that there are PR-friendly genocides to stand up against, and then there are genocides to stand up against that could cause your career harm? Are the calculations really that cynical among people around you creatively? Do they ever come up to you privately and say, "I'm glad you're doing what you're doing, but I cannot"? Do people ever attack you who are actually in your profession and not just some hideous bot out there? Can you speak to us about just the balance of forces around you?
Yeah, I mean, it's really incredible because I had noticed that when I've always been vocal on this, but people have been kind of easy to just, ignore it, but still keep me at least as a friend or something like that. I have felt like little by little, just like people have distanced themselves from me, like as if I'm, and that hurts me because it's like the people who know me the best, like that you would judge my character, that you know my family is from here. Everyone knows that my family is from Palestine. And like even a lot of my close friends, they've met my family. And so, and it really hurt me that I would see people starting to distance themselves more than just, and then I would notice that I was not, that they weren't following me anymore, or just never commenting on anything. I'm like, oh, and then I remember someone else, saying, oh, they put you on mute because they were like kind of tired of your post. So, but that's just more of like a, okay, well, I don't know, maybe it's hard. I don't know. I'm sorry. We can probably
Well,
edit
I can
that.
see why that hurts so much, because they're, and I deal with this in the sports world, they're effectively rolling their eyes at something that for you is your heart, your soul, your mind. And I mean, that's incredibly hurtful.
Right. So for me, there was no question whether or not I would speak out on this. That was never a question because in August of 2023, I had literally just posted 200 Palestinian childrens were slaughtered by Israel, and that I think it was United Nations or Human Rights Watch, they had just put out this huge article on why is it that Palestinian children kept being killed. And I had put this article out, and I seriously maybe had like 10 likes on it or something like that. And I was like, and even before that, I was posting things. Things were happening in my family's neighborhood, and I had a 9-year-old cousin who was arrested. It is the craziest freaking thing. And so I was like, man, why is everyone silent? And then obviously, that date happens that it seems like everyone cared about, just this one date in time that everyone cared about. And I didn't understand it. I was like, how have you been so silent about what's happening? And then just all of a sudden, it felt like a stab almost, like to the heart. But so for me, it was never a question on whether you're going to speak out or not. You know, that was something that I'm like, all right, I'm going to do this. What I couldn't, what I was very kind of surprised by was the, people distancing themselves from me, but also finding out from other people, like, wow, we're really getting blacklisted here. We're really losing agents. There are producers that I know of that have gone to agents and said, don't work with this person again. She is supporting Palestine. I mean, it is that bad out there. We are in a group. We actually have formed a group together because we don't feel protected. We are in a union.
Fantastic. Wow.
Our union is supposed to protect us. That's
Aren't
what unions
they?
are. I mean, the Screen Actors Guild,
They're not
I
protecting you guys.
no, we're not protected. In the history of artists and our union and Hollywood in general, I would say that they have a history of taking a humanitarian response. We don't even have to call it political, but they've usually, you know, would see some type of humanity crisis and they would be the first ones to speak up on it. But for some reason, I mean, we are just so neglected in this industry. And this is also the same industry that has depicted time and time again the Arab as the terrorist on TV, the Muslim as the terrorist on TV. I mean, it's crazy because now I'll pay more attention to it. And I was even watching Wayne's World, a movie that I've always loved. And even in the beginning of that, there's you know these like they show this little terrorist scene, and it's like they have the guy with the thing on his head, and you can clearly tell like he looks Middle Eastern. And I was like, wow. I actually wanted to do a deep dive into that and see how many Hollywood movies have portrayed Middle Eastern people as terrorists. But it's
That
in every.
would be a brilliant contribution because, you know, we've seen docs like The Celluloid Closet that looks at LGBTQ representations in Hollywood history, Hari Kondabolu's documentary about Apu and the effect of the Simpsons character on Indian immigrants and Indian American people. I mean, it was brilliant. I mean, something about the portrayal of Arabs and Muslims and especially Palestinians. I mean, I feel like in the era of Mo and Rami, Sarah Alami could do something like that and really shed some light on these stereotypes. Because you wonder, I mean, I know there's some people who are bigoted, but we also know there are some people who just take it in unconsciously and just say, oh, and don't even think that, wait a minute, there's a counterview here rooted in not just humanism, but the incredible history and bravery of a people that gets erased.
Yes. And you know, on top of that, I really do want to say, because you had brought up this point about like other people, you know, like how do they feel? And because you can witness it at this time, I don't really think anyone could sit there and say it's complicated. Like we've seen so much, right? And I cannot believe how many people who are starting to now silently support me and say, you know, Sarah, I'm seeing it for the first time, and I want you to know that I love you, and I do. I support you, but I cannot lose my job. I can't speak out against this because I don't want to be on a blacklist, and I still like I'm up for the show, or you know, I've done these shows, and I don't want them to not work with me again. So that puts me in a kind of weird position too, because I'm also like I'd say I'm an empath. So sometimes I usually take the be like, okay, well, I can understand where they're coming from. But in this moment, I don't know how people can be silent, especially if you are in the it's like we are storytellers. We are storytellers. We bring the stories to life, and all of that comes from genuine relationships and things that are really happening in the world. So even as an actress, I'm like, you know, I would be the biggest coward, even if I weren't Palestinian, to tell this story. I mean, why are there so many stories about the Holocaust? Because this happened. This was one of the worst things we've ever seen in our history. And it's an important story to be told.
And
But
sorry, go ahead, please. No, please.
if we were if we were back, if it was happening right, like live in front of us, I cannot imagine myself being silent during such a time. I just can't imagine it if I saw it live streamed like that, you know?
No, I understand. When people come to you and say, "I see it now," do you feel gratitude or frustration?
Both. It's weird. I feel like I don't know. I don't know. I wanna have a place one day that maybe I could forgive. But that's really hard for me. I mean, I am happy. Like I feel like the world needs to see it, and I still welcome people because I don't want to scare them to not say anything, you know, and have them because I believe a lot of these I believe a lot of this is hardwiring, like systemic kind of racism. You know, it's like you grow up believing a certain thing and it's hardwired into your mind. And that takes a lot of undoing, really. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it depends what they do. If they ever like actually, I don't know. It depends. Every circumstance is different in that
Yeah,
regard.
it is. I hate to ask this broadly, but it is the blacklist to which you refer, is this primarily driven by Israeli support at the highest corridors of Hollywood? And obviously, I'm saying that in a very circumstant way. I'm not saying that there's some Jewish cabal running Hollywood behind the scenes, what have you. But there is a great deal of Jewish leadership in Hollywood. Remember, audience, I'm Jewish. I mean, Dave Chappelle even has this joke about it where he says a group of black people is a gang, a group of Latinos is a crew, and a group of Jews is a complete coincidence, and we will never speak of it again. It's like you can't even broach the idea of what it means there to be a maybe collective consciousness for fears that you'll be called anti-Semitic for pointing out the obvious. But then there's the other side too about are they afraid that, they live in the United States? Is there fear part of it too? Like we at Hollywood don't want to look like we're supporting Palestinians because that's bad for business too. Which I always find quizzical because if you look at polls of young people, there is support for the Palestinian people. So I don't buy the capitalist market argument either. I wrestle with this too because I do know that it's an anti-Semitic trope, the whole Jews running the media, running the film industry. And yet at the same time, I mean, I know history. Like Hollywood was founded by, it's not a bad thing. Jewish people were denied industry and leadership on the East Coast, so they moved to the West Coast and created their own shit. That's the history of Hollywood.
That is very true. And the thing is too, you know, and that's great. Like if someone happens to be Jewish and happens to be in a leadership role, wonderful. Good for you. But does that person support what Israel's doing? This is the issue here. And the conflation needs to stop. How are we not able to criticize a foreign government? I don't care what religion or ethnicity or anyone is. What does this have to do with you supporting a government that has been able to ethnically cleanse and really genocide free? I mean, in my eyes, it's been going on for so many years because I've seen it firsthand. And I've been Palestine. I spent all my summers in Palestine. I had a gun to my head at 12 years old, a rifle, because we went down another wrong road that we weren't supposed to. And we have license plates that say they're Palestinian. We have a different color. We have a different color on our license plate. So I've seen that firsthand, and I know exactly what my family's been through. So I do have a certain way that I look at my experience in occupied Palestine, and I have a view of what this Israeli government has done. But does that in any way conflate with Jewish people and what they've been through and like who they are? I know incredible Jewish people. I mean, I've gotten to know you just through, you know, social network, and I think you're amazing. And I know that you are a Jewish person. I have a lot of Jewish friends, and I don't conflate it at all. And you know what pisses me off? And this is part of my upbringing. I'm very much a person who fights for human rights. It's who I am. It's kind of like what I've always done. Humanity is just key. And it pisses me off that anyone would even dare to call me anti-Semitic, because there's real anti-Semitism, and you are taking away from it. And that just it pisses me off, because when it does happen, I want to be one of the first ones to say, "Hey, this is wrong. Like, what are you doing? This, I want to speak on it." So I don't understand this. I don't understand this criticism of the Israeli government and what Israel has done in conflation with Jewish people. And I think it's completely disrespectful to Jewish people. And I'll tell you another thing. A lot of people will say, even when I talk about Palestine, they'll say, "You're not Palestinian. Palestine doesn't exist. All Jews come from Palestine." And I will look at them and say, this was actually part of, if I'm saying this correctly, the Nuremberg Laws. Is that not right? I mean, this was like that they actually used that. They used this back in the 1940s in Germany to strip Jewish people of their identity and label them as one bloodline. And they didn't want any Jewish person to recognize any type of European ancestry, when in reality, Jewish people had this rich, diverse culture and upbringing. And they tried to strip it all away and say, "No, out of here. You're from one place. You're from one bloodline." So when people say that to me, I'm like, how can you do that? Like, how can you do that?
No, in the time of the Holocaust, the overwhelming majority of Jews were not Zionists. And Zionists who did exist had open exchanges. This is all online. If people want to look it up, this is all documented. But there were open exchanges with the Nazi government about I guess you'd call it some sort of refugeeing themselves. To go to historic Palestine and resettle there. In fact, other options were put on the table of different places on
Argentina,
Earth.
right? Argentina.
Argentina,
Yeah.
Guyana, I think, was on the table at one point. So the idea of an ethnostate is a very modern idea. 1880s, 1890s. So this idea that it's this fixed idea, like in Jewish culture, that someday we must have an ethnostate. It is historically not true. I mean, they beat us over the head with either the ahistorical or the non-historical. And it's so interesting how it always ends up in the same place. You're anti-Semitic if you disagree with me. And if you say, well, that just shuts down the conversation, they'll just say, exactly, because that's exactly what I want to do, is shut down the damn conversation, because the conversation does not favor one particular side. It's like when Stephen Colbert once said, facts have a liberal bias. It's like you don't want to get into a factual argument about Israel Palestine if you're a Zionist and you're talking to somebody who even knows 5% of what you know, the other person knows about the history, because the facts are so damning. And that all leads to this question. Unless you want to say something to that, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'm curious, like, we speak about Hollywood and its limitations and a blacklist, and at the same time, the Academy votes for No Other Land for best documentary. Do you th And if afterwards, the people like John Podhoretz, and I mean, people lost their minds in the right-wing magosphere that this terrific documentary, actually, heaven forfend, was rewarded for its awesomeness. And I wanted to ask you, does that feel like kind of a one-off,
Well,
or
I
does
will
it
say
feel like an
this.
actual political shift in some way?
I will say, and I want to bring up when we talk about blacklist too, because there's not a physical list that goes around that says, "Well, no one's going to work with this person." No. What I specifically want to mention is that, like I said before, when I have known people who would go to agents and stuff like this and be like, "Hey, don't, you cannot work with this person." So it's just things like that. So when we refer to blacklist, there's no physical list. It's just that you put yourself in a position where, for some reason, people are very offended by you speaking about this foreign government that they don't want to work with you. So that's that. Now, as far as like no other land, and you know what? I do think that there has been a shift. If you remember 19, was it 1975 or something like that? Vanessa,
Vanessa Redgrave, yes, winning Best Supporting Actress for Julia, thanking the Academy for giving her an Oscar in the face of quote unquote the Zionist thugs protesting outside. Sorry, I'm a movie fan. Go ahead.
No, I'm so happy that you remember that so well, because it's very important when it comes to this situation, when it comes to this topic, I mean, because you can see there that this is not just something that's come up. This has been a systemic, what's the word that I'm looking for?
A common thread.
Yes, it's become a common thread. It
Yeah.
is like a systemic issue that we've had for a long time, and she herself had lost everything after accepting that speech. I mean, after that acceptance speech, she had lost everything. So it just goes to show you where Hollywood has kind of been throughout history. But then there is this place where we are at in 2025 now. And to see something like that happen, I mean, I remember recording it, and I was just like, there's actually audio recording of me, like, 'cause I just started crying. Like, I couldn't believe that I could see, as a Palestinian person myself, who's an actress, I could not believe that I see this type of representation on TV. 'Cause I never thought I would see that,
Yeah.
honestly. At least in my lifetime, I never thought I can see winning the biggest award, essentially, in our field. And I do think that although it did upset many people, which tells you a lot, the fact that people would be upset about that shows you exactly what we are talking about here, and it's exactly why a film like that exists, to really display in front of the world what is happening. They're putting it on a platter for you to see, and the people who think that they're fighting against it, they're actually kind of presenting the platter to all of you as well, and be like, hey, holy shit, like this is happening, and people are so against it that they have that reaction when we show you what's happening. So yeah, I do think that there is definitely a shift with that film. And I honestly think that, and this is one thing that I've had discussions with about with my father about, is that him being 80, 82 now, and seeing this shift, because he said at the time, he said a few years ago, he had kind of like given up. It's not that he gave up on his people, he just gave up on the thought that they would ever be free.
He
They've
gave up
been,
on these people. Not
yes,
the people over there, the people
not the
over
people.
here.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yes.
Yeah. He just he it's not like he I don't want to say I think gave up is just not the greatest word, but my
Oh,
father,
yeah. But I hear it though. I hear it. Absolutely.
he just felt like he had taken so much, and he has seen his family go through so much, and himself, and he was just like, no one is ever gonna accept us. No one is ever gonna accept us. They're never gonna believe our us. They're never gonna see the way that we're treated. And I will say, as horrific of what's happening to them, I don't think any of them died in vain. Like, their deaths are they mean so much to the entire world. They have truly freed Palestine, even if people cannot see it yet, because they are living through this starvation and torture and killings and just indiscriminate bombing. They have freed Palestine in a sense that they have brought Palestine to the entire world. I remember when I used to tell people I'm Palestinian, and they would say, what is that? I'd be like, what? And I would say it with this pride, because I've always been proud of where I come from just because it's such a beautiful history, actually. And so they would say, "What's that?" And now there's not one person. Actually, when people and I say I'm Palestinian, I swear the first thing they say mostly is, "Can I hug you?"
That's a shift.
I know.
That's a shift. I just to keep this a little bit Hollywood centric. This is for
Yeah, I'm
people
sorry.
listening. No, not at all, not at all. I just want to point out, like, if people go on YouTube and see the Vanessa Redgrave speech, one thing that's really striking is, with the exception of like Jane Fonda, like everybody boos her, and then Patty Chayefsky, the screenwriter, comes on stage afterwards, and I think this is so typical of the other side. He doesn't make any kind of argument, like that there aren't thugs outside protesting Vanessa Redgrave. He just said, "I think people shouldn't talk if they don't know what they're talking about." Which, how often do you hear that? Like that saw, and he gets this rousing ovation. Now you compare that to the No Other Land winners. I want to say their names: Yuval Abraham and Bassel Adra, and Hamdan Bilal. He was the person, he was the director, who was, of course, violently detained, proving the point of the film against Israelis who were like, "It's all fiction." And then he gets violently. I mean, the ovation when they won was really stirring to me when you think about who is in the audience.
It really was. Yeah, it
Do
what?
people, I'm sorry, do people talk to each other like the Mark Ruffalos, the John Cusacks, the people who have a kind of platform, Chicago's own John Cusack, of course. Do people come together of to celebrities for Palestine? Does that is there anything even informal that exists?
Well, like I said, just I think people who've been doing this for a long time, they have their own. They probably are on some private text threads or something like that. You know, they're probably on like some kind of WhatsApp group thread. But yeah, for us, like I said, we have like our group, or we had a group, SAG members for ceasefire, where we all because we all like felt like we needed community.
Wonderful.
Yeah. You had asked, wait, you had mentioned something about the Vanessa Redgrave, and I was going to touch on it, and I just couldn't. I don't know
Oh,
what.
just that, winning for Julia, which is ironic if people know that story. And then she thanks everybody who voted for her in the face of, like, I believe the exact phrase was Zionist thugs, like the ones picketing outside.
Yeah. Then
And she was still in the first Mission Impossible. That's how good an actress Vanessa Redgrave was. But you're right, so much was taken away from her after that speech. That's pretty documented at this point.
like I think that win of No Other Land, I think it has opened the doors for people to feel a little more comfortable with the conversation of what's happening, because like I had mentioned before, I think a lot of people have just been afraid, because I know that for one, I know that 1,000%, because people have told me I'm afraid. I'm afraid. And I think if anything, they have opened that door really for other screenwriters to come through and performers to come through and be able to tell those stories of what's happening and maybe not be so afraid anymore. And you know, the thing too, and this is now I remember what I was going to say. You know, you had mentioned actually about like, don't talk about it if you don't know anything about it. And the crazy thing, I think the same thing, but the person saying that, they don't know anything about it, and I can tell, right? So for me, I have felt like, and I was okay with losing everything. I was okay with not being an actress anymore, to be honest with you. And the reason being is because it's not easy for me. I'm not a content creator, even though my following has grown and stuff like that. I'm not a content creator. I don't do that type of stuff. But what I am, I'm a human being, and I really care. And of course, we do have that added, like me being Palestinian, right? But I care about the good in this world, and I want to contribute to that. And so I felt like, how can I talk about this if I'm not well versed in the subject myself? So much of those things that I used to do before, which before it, my days would be spent reading through scripts, or even if I was doing a play or something like that, that's what I spent my time doing. And I'm not saying I'm not, I still work. I still get some work. I still read my scripts, but so much of my time is honestly just unpaid, things that I really care about, and that is studying. I study so much. I watch the news, and I watch news that I wouldn't generally watch, like freaking Fox, which I would never watch, but I want to see what they're saying over there, and I want to see what they're saying at Al Jazeera, and I want to see what they're saying on CNN, because I want to have like all of the information that I can. I have this book over here. This is crazy. This was written in 1989. It's a book by James Graff. And most people can't even get their hands on this book. I had got this from my dad. And when I was reading this book, my jaw had dropped. It's a book, it's called Palestinian Children and Israeli State Violence. It listed every single child who had been killed and exactly the way that they had been killed. It also listed children that were tortured or even raped. And this is not just a book. This is actually like data researched from very credible sources. And when I was reading all this, I'm like, wow, and I'm taking notes and everything. And then that is what kind of caused me to be like, okay, well, let me get more books. Let me get more books. And I started reading on the history of it. And I'm not a scholar, And I think that sometimes, that's the thing too, where you're like, well, you know what, Sarah, you're street smart. You're good at arts, but you're not a scholar. You can't, sit there and talk with the best of them. But what I can do is tell you my story. I can tell you about my family. I can tell you what my father's been through. I can tell you about what happened when I was in Palestine myself. But I can also tell you what I have felt being in an industry where I feel like in that world sometimes like you're just disposable, just like, oh, like it's just Palestinian. And then what they do is they put you in this group of like, oh, well, Palestinian is Afghanistan or like Pakistan, or the Iraq War. I remember you Palestinians from the Iraq War. And then they'll say weird things like, the Muslims, well, you go there if you're gay, they're gonna throw you off a building. Like this weird stuff. And I'm just sitting there like, you have no idea. Like my family in Palestine is so liberal. I got gay cousins who are Palestinian. We are people, and just the way that there are Christians that are extremists, of course, they're like in every religion, I think you have that aspect. And it's the same thing here when you look at, if you look at the amount of crimes here that are committed against either different races or, the LGBTQ, plus community, there are so many violent acts of crime against these people. But if you heard one story, imagine someone taking that story, and they live in another side of the world, like, hey, don't go to America, they're gonna th throw you off the building
People
if
are
you're gay,
saying that now.
right? They're gonna throw you off the building if you're gay. And it's
Or
like people
ICE is
know,
gonna get
right? That's true, actually.
No, we're finding that they're having trouble selling tickets to the World Cup because Trump won't commit to not having ICE outside the stadiums.
You're
So
kidding.
international, it's being played. There are also matches in Mexico and Canada, and people are flocking there with tickets, and they're having
Oh.
trouble selling them outside the United States.
Wow.
And having it in LA too, where there's massive immigrant communities that would love to go to the World Cup, but you see ICE picking people up. They have documents, they don't have documents. You get sent to El Salvador to a slave labor prison. I mean, who is this country to even lecture anybody at this point?
Mean, especially like the issues that we have here in America. I mean,
And
like,
that's where you get to the Iran stuff, which is where I wanted to end with you.
oh.
It's like I have found there to be such atrocities being committed against Palestinians in recent days. And you have to go to like literally the end of the New York Times A section in the bottom to hear about dozens and dozens of people being slaughtered trying to get food. And it's just like Iran, Iran, Iran. And then, of course, building up Iran as being this kind of monster, as if Israel hasn't invaded what, like five countries in
Right.
recent years and has a nuclear weapon already and bombs people. And who is Iran in a war against? I mean, it makes your head spin. And as someone with dear friends who have family in Iran, it's just harrowing to hear about what they're putting people through. It's a form of terror, even if the kind of US hot war never happens.
Exactly. And this is why, this is the thing here, right? Like, I can look at Iran and see, okay, well, I'm not from there. I don't know the politics or the structure there. So I can't say, I can't say speak on that. What I can speak on though is what Israel is doing to them to get them to provoke a war. They always like do this thing where they conflate, right? And so if you speak out against what Israel is doing, which is trying to provoke a war and trying to bring the United States into that war, immediately they think that everything that Iran has done that you agree with. Like, oh, you're against Israel. You support everything that Iran has done. And again, I can't speak on what Iran has done because I'm not a Iranian, I'm not Persian. I don't know anything to that degree. But what I can speak on is something clearly that's in front of me, and that is this war being provoked by Israel. And again, it comes from the same thing where I can do this, but you can't. I can have nuclear weapons, but you can't. When it's pretty terrifying to see that Israel has nuclear weapons, even though they're not commenting on it, so we're supposed to say, I guess, that oh, we don't know if they do, but every sign suggests that they actually do have it. I mean, it's like,
Yeah,
come
I mean,
on.
the New York Times talks about it and they still deny it. It's wild.
It's absolutely wild. And it's one of those things like, okay, we're gonna bomb you. And then he goes into this thing. It's the same stuff that he used to kill so many people in Palestine. Is he says, you know what? If we don't do this, they're gonna kill you guys next. They're gonna kill New York. Is that what Netanyahu said the other day? He's like,
They're gonna bomb the
today
United
it's
States.
us, today it's you. He uses this, fear to embed it in you guys that everyone's like, oh my God, we got to be against Iran. It's like, come on, what are you doing? It's like, how can you not? At this point, it's so obvious. It is so obvious. You don't have to be a scholar. You don't have to be, really have any huge academic background on this entire thing. All you have to do is just like listen to one of Netanyahu's speeches and you'd be like, oh, this guy off is off his rocker. It's just so obvious to me.
It's very clear, I think, to people again who are paying attention. So we still wrestle with this question. What do you do with people who start paying attention? Like, how do you welcome them into the movement while also really wanting to express that there's some real harm and that it's taken this much to get them through the door? Because this suffering has been truly ongoing. And how long can people preach ignorance when a genocide is coming through your phone? It's not like somebody's refusing to watch the 7 p.m. news and therefore they know nothing. I mean, we're all aware, maybe too aware of everything all the time.
Right. I have a friend who hurt me so bad. They had texted me something like pretty early on, and I was like, wow. Like, I couldn't believe that this came from this person. And there's a part of me that really like I hoped this person would come to me and apologize, and but they still haven't taken any accountability, and I don't even maybe they still feel a certain way, I don't know. There's a part of me that's like, huh, like Sarah, do you wanna should I reach out, and then I'm like, you know what, no. But I do feel like I feel like we should all kind of give grace to people who are coming around. For me, I don't want to shut them out because We're not going to get anywhere if we do.
Yeah.
This is such a collaborative effort where we come together and have like deep conversations, hurtful conversations. I mean, there was a reason why somebody felt that way in the first place.
Yeah.
So for me, it really would be about like, I want to listen. I want to listen to people. I want to know where they're coming from. But I also want them to know where I'm coming from. Because there's never anything that I've done that had ill intent behind it. Like, I genuinely have tried to come from a good place. And what harms me is that, or what hurts me, I'd say, is that I feel like I'm a very loving person. Like I love to love people, and I'm not that type of person usually who like gets angry, but I find myself sometimes like scrolling, and I find this like anger inside of me. Like I'm like enraged. Like I'm so mad, especially if I see someone commenting and then I scroll up and I see another little child like with her head blown off or something like that. So I'm having this rage inside of me, and it's like this effort to try to like figure these thoughts and emotions that I'm having, but also have try to have some type of grace to have conversations with people who I feel are so ignorant.
It hurts. There's
It
no question
hurts.
about that. Look, you're so brilliant with your storytelling. I hope you feel the strength of your personal story, and I hope you're able to put it to paper. I hope we find it on screen. I hope your pilot comes off. I hope it's not one of the ones that hasn't been seen, to quote Quentin Tarantino's script in Pulp Fiction. I hope it's one of the ones that gets seen. I'm sure it's better than Fox 5. I forget what it was called. Uma Thurman's pilot. We'll just let that go. Fox something 5. But I wouldn't. I can't let you go. And you've been so generous with your time. I can't let you go without asking you something I ask everybody on this show, within the context, though, of what we're talking about, which is really like what gives you strength. And that question is, what's the music on your playlist?
Oh
What do
my
you
God. Oh
listen to get through the day? What do you listen to? I mean, music plays a role in all of our lives. Maybe it's what you listen to when you work. Some people really need that. Maybe
I'm
it's what you
so
listen to when
funny.
you hit the whatever it is, the bike or whatever. But what do you listen to?
Don't even believe it. I'm not even kidding. It goes straight from like Metallica Fade to Black to like Lithium by Nirvana. It'll straight play into Tupac. I'm not even kidding. Like it'll just straight like Machiavelli. Like it'll go there. And then it'll just start playing Unchained Melody. Like that's who I am as I'm all over the place. But those are like some of my favorite those are some of my favorite songs. I'll even play what is that? Oh God, Mazzy Star,
Sure.
Fade into, right?
I can't find myself out of the 90s when I find myself listening to stuff. It's just like, it's like trapped. It's like, when did it come out? Let's see what Biggie's talking about. Maybe I'll hear something new. It's like comfort food of brilliance. And I
Yes.
try to see it like that.
I will tell you this. It is funny having this like social media kind of thing that we're doing where you're meeting different people and stuff, because like one of my favorite bands was Garbage. I'm only happy when it
When it
rains.
rains, of course. Shirley
So,
Manson.
yes. And so she started following me, and then she reposts one of my posts the other day, and I'm just like, listen,
Too much. You can die at that point with a smile on your face.
and it is funny because my brother is a musician, and he had stopped actually for a long time, and then with our mother's death, we had kind of come together again and formed our bond of my big brother, little sister kind of. And it's funny because no one really knows like the music that my brother and I loved so much growing up. And so, I just totally geek out with him. I'm like, garbage just like reposted my stuff, like, so I love geeking out with him about stuff like that.
I love that stuff. Well, you've been, like I said, incredibly generous. Sarah, is there anything else you'd like to say? Anything you want to get off your shoulders? Anything you want the listeners to know about any projects that you want people to keep their eyes out for, other than what is going to be an extremely successful pilot?
Thank you. Not work-wise, nothing there. Just because I want to keep this just focused, not on me, but I really want to keep this focused on the people of Palestine.
Good.
And I'm sure that your viewers, maybe have similar interests and stuff like that. So maybe they're more, leaning towards pro-Palestine. But for the people who aren't, and they still haven't come around, they're still trying to learn. Please, I just want them to really have a heart and listen to these stories and follow Palestinian journalists. And I know that it's hard to look at. A lot of the conversations that I'm having, people will say, listen, I can't see that stuff. I can't see a child being shot. I can't see a child being dead. And I understand that that's really hard to see, but if it's that hard for you to see it, then how would you not say something about it? So I just hope that you find it in your heart, because you can make a difference. I promise you. I know that you may think like you're just one person, but together we can really collectively make a difference. I know that from the bottom of my heart. So I'm just asking you to like choose kindness, please, and help to save them, because you really can save a life. So.
A great note to end on. And I want to shout out all my listeners who are sports fans and are really learning about this issue for the first time because they're listening to a quote unquote sports podcast.
Yes.
Appreciate you all. Open your eyes. For every single one of you that joins this struggle, lives will be saved.
Yes.
Sarah Alami, thank you so much for joining us here on the Edge of Sports podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And for everybody out there listening, thank you, David Tigabu. Thank you, who's my producer. Thank you so much to The Nation Magazine. Everybody out there, it's a tough world, but we can do it if we come together. We can make this world what we want it to be. Please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.